Coffee Table Typography Number 38, Heading Coffee Table Typography, Heading Issue Number 38, SEP 2017. Writing hand, I've previously left you with some thoughts on analog memories and records, from having just started my Polaroid project. Since then, I've also ditched my digital note-taking. I still love you, I a writer, and committed to a very physical, sturdy notebook. I mention this because looking back at previous entries, I can't help but notice my handwriting, and how much it tells about where and how they were written. It's easy to tell at a glance what the writing conditions were like for each entry. Sloppy and squiggly. Probably riding on a bumpy bus or taxi. Slanted and misaligned. Probably wrote it on the subway journeys. Clean and straight. Most likely at my desk at home, with a cup of coffee on hand, and the coffee cup stains. Oh, how I've grown to like them. Celebrating the imperfections. I remember reading Link the Missing Ink by Philip Hensher, and thinking about how we don't, in fact, know what our best friend's handwriting looks like. Do you? It makes me wonder about what a mood-slash-environment-adaptive digital typeface would look like. We'd call them moody variable fonts. In actual type news, check out Link Subfont if you're looking to subset Google Font spliffs into web pages. And do not miss Link Typekit's new visual search, which works fantastically well. Kudos, Typekit. Also, someone made a Link font out of piss, and it looks interesting. Maple Leaf. In other news, I left the gorgeous and raw Berlin life to the surprisingly warm as I write this North American life of Montreal, Canada. So if you're around, please do say hello. Also, I'll soon be switching my newsletter delivery system from Tiny Letter to Review. Hopefully the contacts transition will be a smooth one, but keep an eye out on your spam folder in 3 or 4 weeks' time just in case something goes wrong. Enjoy this week's selection. Heart Suit Hot Beverage. Ricardo M. Heading unlabeled graphic to get missing image descriptions. Open the context menu. Heading link. Paul McNeil selects and dissects his 6 favorite faces typefaces books. Paul McNeil, author of Link the Visual History of Type, which, by the way, looks like a fantastic book with more than 300 typeface reviews, writes for It's Nice that a condensed version of his favorite typefaces reviews. In this article, he writes about the Aldi Italic 1501, Block 1908, Bremer Antiqua 1922, Patrona Brodesque 1931, Found 1989, and Lino 2010. As you can see, Paul really went through a lot of trouble to encompass the history of typefaces through 5 centuries. Here's his full review of a favorite of mine, Block, since it had a significant impact in Berlin's graphic design. Although geometric sans serifs are commonly thought to have originated in the 1920s with groundbreaking designs like Jakob Erbar's eponymous typeface from 1922, there is no denying the brutal geometry that underlies the uneven edges of Bloch's monolithic letter forms from 1908. It was created for the Berthold Type Foundry by Hermann Hoffmann, a German type designer with a background in newspaper work. Bloch's origins can be seen in contemporary advertising from Berlin, in particular the lettering of Lucien Bernhard. His exceptional hand-painted posters for commercial clients, such as Bosch and Manali, are precisely replicated in Bloch's distinctively thick-set characters, wonky contours, colossal X-height, and stunted descenders. Like the lettering it references, Bloch achieves maximum impact with minimum means. In between starting this entry and finishing it, Paul's book somehow sneaked into the wish list. Keep reading for the other Paul's reviews and journey through typographical time. Link, keep reading, right arrow. Heading unlabeled graphic 00D048B6DF34017-99CCV69F. Heading link type Thursday. Learning to design for print interview people. On a recent interview for Type Thursday, Marina Joyce, author of Designing for Print, shares her journey into and through the world of typography, and specifically, the world of print design. In the process, she curates a few very thoughtful tips for anyone wanting to dive into that world. Even if you're not looking for a print dive in, you'll find plenty of motivation and inspiration to give and share. When asked about how the whole thing started, Marina says, "I thought to myself, I like printing. I know how to run a company. So, sure. And so I bought a print shop." Passion doesn't always have to be the driver. But in Marina's case, it was also the fuel. For those of you, I should say us, because, well, often stopped in the tracks with imposter syndrome, or not going any further because we don't know how, Marina has some great advice. In the beginning, I just had to fake it until I made it. Customers and prospects would call, and I would go pick up a sample and say, "Sure, we can print this," then bring it back to the shop, and my pressman would say, "No, we can't." Then scramble to find a solution. I would call binaries and describe the sample. Literally going, it is 8.5x11. It has two staples, but not through the spine. Through the front to the back, and the binary person would say, okay, it is side-stitched. That's how I learned. As for the printing tips, I'll just leave you with the last one, which also serves for those of us in the digital design world, where the web is the medium. And this one is important. Your monitor is not a proofing device. When you are designing for web, you hit preview and see the error immediately. When you are in InDesign and hit preview, that is not a proof. Proofing systems vary from printer to printer, so get with your printer when you are between projects and learn about what they can and cannot do proof-wise. Find out what their proofs represent. Are they G7 or Dracal certified? That can make a difference. Variable fonts carry with them a broad range of possibilities and can open up entire design spaces of creative options to type, graphic and web designers. These aren't human readable at first, they exist as mathematical representations. However, there are proposed approaches to help us visualize and manipulate variable fonts. By exploring user interface patterns, we can better understand how to illuminate the exciting spaces within a variable font at its foundation. This involves making variable fonts aware of their context. A fantastic and inspirational read in its entirety, so please keep reading and say hello to Marina. Link, keep reading, right arrow, heading, link, unlabeled, graphic, C1D35,391,394,4,370,859,9,893, heading, link, a type I conference. Videos of the conferences so far, videos education link a type I, or Association Typographique Internationale, just wrapped up here in Montreal. Sadly I didn't arrive in time to attend it, and some of the talks are already online for viewing at the moment of writing. There's already a lot of talks online, link which you can check here. Full disclaimer, I haven't had time to watch any of them yet, as my life is still utter chaos, but this is my selection for my next few evenings. Link, why I love designing for public spaces. Paula Scher, link, how not to draw accents. David Jonathan Ross, link, from stroke to screen, the future of hand lettering in a digital world. Christopher Rulo, link, user interfaces in type design, opportunities in variable fonts. Santiago Orozco, link, written into Europe. 50 years of typographic persuasion. Paul Luna, link, is harmony possible between East Asian and Western glyphs? Taro Yamamoto, and the list goes on. I'm absolutely sure that the quality of each one is top-notch, as it's usually the case with a type I. Let's just say I'm quite happy I'm still unemployed for the next 10 days, as I go through this list. Link, read on, right arrow, heading, unlabeled graphic, 68CDF 886,9792 4F46B320BK86, heading, link, when lines roamed the earth. The Gutenberg Revolution, part I, history education. I'm honestly surprised how this three-part story by Font Bureau didn't make a bang in the online world, or maybe I missed it. This is a fantastic essay by David Berlow on the history, influence and cultural mechanics of the Mergen Thaler's machine, as well as how things changed with the arrival of Linotype. What makes this essay so interesting is its focus on the Metal Revolution, and how it changed the virtualization of typesetting in the early days. Not much about letterpress may strike us as virtual today, but Gutenberg's innovation of separating the formation of letters from the document they were formed on marked a step toward abstraction. 400 years later, it was still going strong, because, among other things, you could tie the text up and store it. There's a lot to make a note of in such a short first essay, though Mergen Thaler's revolution was in text type, which was the hardest to set and wore out the fastest. Not having to get the type from the case, print, and then put it back in the case, in fact stopping it from coming in the door altogether, was the virtual advance. The type appeared and disappeared in and out of a melting pot. Also remarkably interesting is how different cultures played a role in this revolution, often with its own peculiar needs. A different split of technologies might take place in other markets and other publishing cultures. The Ottoman Empire, which used the Arabic script for publishing in both Arabic and Turkish, got native Muslim ownership of Gutenberg's invention by the early 18th century, and part of the initial compromise between Arabic script publishers and letterpress was the separation of secular and religious publishing. Secular texts might be printed, but religious texts would be handwritten by calligraphers, until the mid-19th century. And although machine parts are fine for some designs, languages, and scripts, they are hopeless for others, or at least they were until the arrival of photographic or digital type. So while a struggle ensued for the right balance between writing, hand-setting, and mechanical typesetting in cultures around the world, the Latin script, especially in use for English, hit the sweet spot, both technically and culturally. This essay is not without David's personal remarks from his time at Linotype in the early days, which gives us insight we wouldn't really get from a history book. Keep reading, and bear in mind there's also part Roman 2 and part Roman 3. Link, keep reading, right arrow, heading, unlabeled graphic, E47, E752, 991, A47, FD back for red, 358. Heading, link, a rough guide to making a medieval manuscript, and now for something completely different, making books. So maybe not that different after all, as hardly anything else goes better with typography than books and coffee, but you know that already.